The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free ARFCOM do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission begins.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free ARFCOM starts now.
That's right, fellow ARFCOMers, you are listening to Radio Free ARFCOM, our weekly broadcast for AR15.com. I'm your host, John Gold, and we've got a great show for you tonight, a great show lined up. We're going to kick it off with Joe DeBurgley, our resident NRA board member, Joe DeBurgley. So are you there with me?
I am.
So, you just got back from CPAC. You spent the weekend there, is that right?
I did, John. Had a great time with a lot of great patriots.
Why don't you go ahead and give everybody a rundown of some of the highlights that you witnessed from CPAC?
Well, it was a great conference. It's always nice to be around 10,000 people of the same thoughts and the same political wherewithal. We got in on Wednesday. We spent Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in some plenary sessions, meeting a lot of the great people, such as Mitt Romney. Ron Paul's people were out in force. Mike Huckabee's people were there. A lot of the conservative movement and culture was there. Glenn Beck. It was just a great consortium of individuals, obviously, who are very pro in their viewpoints, and it was a great couple of days.
So did you actually get to see the Dick Cheney speech when he came on?
I did. Actually, he was a surprise. Liz Cheney, his daughter, was presenting, and she's a force to be reckoned with in her own right. And right at the end, when she was just about to complete her comments, out came her father. And then he had a couple of choice red meat lines to throw out to the audience. But it was great. It was very well received. He's got a great following there at CPAC. And I had the opportunity to meet with him very briefly. Great man. He really is. And he's got our country first in all his actions.
So for somebody who's never been to CPAC, and say some of our listeners, maybe they want to go to CPAC next year, what do you have to do to go to CPAC? Do you have to fill out an application? Do you have to have a ticket? What's the procedure there?
The procedure, and I encourage anybody who's interested to go to any political conference. They've been great. I've been to a variety of Republican functions and what have you. This is my first time at CPAC. The NRA was a co-sponsor of the event. And normally there's a registration fee included. Students are drastically reduced. If there's anybody out there who wants to go next year, who perhaps does not have the funds or the wherewithal, if they're in the D.C. area, I'll do my best to accommodate you to get you in. Obviously, if there's a great many of you, I won't be able to do it, but I'll get the people who are interested to try to experience it. And there's a lot of free – most of the things are free and open to the public. It's just a matter of being in the Washington, D.C. area during the time when the American Conservation Union Conservative Union, there we go.
Conservative Union.
Holds their event. But if there's a registration, you have credentials, there's a straw poll that's conducted, which is – the results are published and seems to be the delight of the media – that gives them a little red meat to talk about for a couple of days. And the plenary sessions are open from the beginning through end, and there's something there for everybody.
Let's talk a little bit about the straw poll you mentioned. It's well known on ARFCOM that Ron Paul won the straw poll, but can you talk about how they conduct the straw poll, actually? Does everybody get a ballot? If you attend, you automatically get a ballot. Do you have to go ask for a ballot from somebody? How does that work?
What happens is once you get your credentials and you walk around, they had individuals throughout the events the entire time basically asking for you to participate in the poll. And there's a two-page questionnaire which you fill out, and it just doesn't cover who you believe will be the next presidential candidate or who we should support. They ask you a variety of questions. And they get a little bit of information. It's akin to a poll that you see on TV, sponsored through Fox News or the Wall Street Journal, what have you.
Okay. And so Ron Paul won it this year with quite a substantial margin. I think second place was Mitt Romney. Is that right?
That's correct. The other things that were asked, I mean, with the candidates, Ron Paul had a very large contingent of on-the-ground supporters. His people were everywhere, basically. And he was 1%. He was the selection for who would you vote for the next Republican nominee. Second was Mitt Romney. Third, Romney was 22%. Governor Sarah Palin was 7%. Tim Pawlenty was 6%. Indiana Congressman Mike Pence was 5%. And it goes on to Speaker Gingrich, Mike Huckabee at 4%. And a couple others that round out the selections.
So just to clarify for people, this is just a straw poll. It doesn't have any bearing on GOP nominations. It doesn't have any bearing on who's going to get the nod for the GOP run in 2012. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's basically one of many straw polls that are out there. We all know about the caucuses and what have you that are becoming in the years to come. In Iowa, what have you, which is traditionally the first one. This is just to get an indication of who is looking or who in the public eye or who from the attendees of CPAC curry the most favor. The past two straw polls have been won by Mitt Romney.
Okay.
So we had Mitt Romney the last 2 years and then Ron Paul this year with Romney finishing a strong second.
Ron Paul did give a pretty stirring speech. Were you able to hear it?
I did. Ron Paul's very, very good on the issue, specifically. He's definitely out there. He's a constructionist, and he follows the Constitution. So he was on his game.
What kind of grade does he get from the NRA? I know the NRA grades out each of the senators. What kind of grade does he get?
If I remember correctly, he's a strong A. He may
he's
be
a strong A, which means that he's as good as we can get as far as gun rights are concerned.
For the most part. And Congressman Paul has always been there for us on our issue.
Okay. I just got IM'd a message from FP1201. He wanted to know, for those just tuning in or don't know, what exactly is CPAC? And you went over it a little bit. But just can you kind of give a general overview once again for people that don't know what is the conservative union and how does it come together?
Sure. There's CPAC stands for the Conservative Political Action Conference. It is hosted by the American Conservative Union, which is a think tank or organization of individuals, has a board of directors. It's run by David Keene, who just so happens to be the first vice president of the NRA, who runs the union, and they basically champion the conservative issues and the conservative way of life and the way of thinking. So it's a union of people who come together who curry pro-life issues, pro-gun, all the issues you would think would come under the umbrella of the conservative movement.
Okay. If you've got any questions for Joe, please feel free to call in. Ask him anything you want. He is our resident NRA board member, and he represents ARFCOM very well on the NRA board. One thing I wanted to talk with you about, Joe, that we didn't get a chance to talk about last week was the state of Washington, not Washington, D.C., but Washington State. They've got some legislation trying to be pushed through on an assault weapons ban. Is that correct?
That is true. There's a movement about. It's in their Senate. And it's Senate Bill 6396. And basically, their elected officials are trying to bring forth a California-style gun control, which would basically outlaw, be one of the most strictest assault weapons, quote-unquote, so-called assault weapons bill, out there. And basically it would outlaw every semi-automatic and pump-action rifle and shotgun that has a detachable magazine and has a pistol grip located near the trigger.
Also, has a what located? Children, has a, excuse me?
I'm sorry.
Has a what located near the trigger?
Pistol grip.
Okay, you're cutting out just a little bit.
Okay, I'm getting feedback. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I heard a 10-round clip, or I heard a detachable magazine, and then what was that, a pistol grip?
And a pistol grip located near the trigger.
Okay.
Also, if there's a magazine, there's more than 10 rounds in the magazine, you're considered a felon.
Oh, wow.
If you have a concealed pistol license, if you have a concealed pistol license, or a permit, and you have a pistol that contains more than 10 rounds, you're considered a felon under this bill.
Oh wow! So even your average person with a Glock 17 or a Glock 19, if they had a full magazine, then they would be a felon.
Well, according to what they're trying to pass here,
if they pass the law.
Mm-hmm. If they pass the law. Also, there is basically it would outlaw most of the firearms that we currently use for hunting. So it's a very strict piece of legislation. But I will tell you this, John. There's a lot of activity on the part of the state association there in Washington State. The NRA, ILA is firmly entrenched in this issue. The elected officials are getting record numbers of calls, emails, letters, and visits, which are probably the most important thing on this issue, visits to their district offices. So I think we're making a difference. We need to keep the pressure on to ensure that this does not go anywhere. All indications are that we're doing a great job batting this back. So just make sure, and I would try to tell everybody in that area, to contact their state representatives and their state senators and urge them to oppose Senate Bill 6396.
So we have a fire mission for all our Washington State ARFCOMers. You have a fire mission, you guys. Contact your local, contact your district representative and make sure you let them know that you strongly oppose this legislation. 6506, is that what you said it was?
6396. Oh, Senate Bill 6396.
Okay. Make sure you contact me, guys. If you stand by idly and don't do anything, you don't have a place to complain if this type of thing passes. Now, Joe, do you think this is a backlash to the shootings of the four officers late last year?
Well, any time there's any type of shooting that is, and most of them are notorious, or it brings a lot of, and as a law enforcement officer myself, that certainly was a very dramatic, and I feel for those officers and their families. There's always legislation being pushed. I don't know, or I don't really believe it is the result of that specific instance. I know there's always some that result nationwide after any type of shooting, be it in a mall, a school, what have you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for the record, they did a complete review of that shooting, and obviously, you know, he was a criminal to begin with. So any laws that are passed are not going to stop guys like him from doing what they did. But the sheriff that did the sheriff that was in charge of the review of that incident actually came out and said himself, "We don't need more gun laws here in Washington State. They're not going to prevent crimes like this, and they never do prevent crimes like this."
Most certainly. And, John, what transpires, we always try to sit back, and as much as we repeat it to ourselves, you can pass all the laws you want. By definition, a criminal is one who breaks them. And when you pass these laws prohibiting our rights to keep and bear arms, law-abiding citizens will follow those laws. Like them or not, they follow the laws. Criminals can care less. And if you look at any of the documentation or any of the empirical research, is when they go into a prison, they ask, what is the biggest deterrent? We know, meaning criminals will say, we know if the house is armed, if there's somebody in that house that is armed, we stay away from it.
So it goes back to the old, if you outlaw guns, only outlaws will have guns.
Most certainly. And that's the whole thing. And very seldom, nationwide, if you look at it, when an individual, a lawful individual, has either used his firearm or her firearm, or has brandished or shown their firearm during the commission of an offense to them, and nothing happened, there's very seldom any type of violent play or violent encounters or crimes committed by somebody who legally possesses a firearm or a permit or a license or whatever that particular state's called for. It's normally somebody who has got that firearm, makes a conscious decision to use that firearm in furtherance of commission of a felony. So they're already criminals when they obtain those firearms, and that's why we in the IRA are fighting for our rights every day.
As all lawful gun owners know, the criminals, they don't care about the laws. The laws have no effect on their ability to get weapons, their ability to use these weapons, or their willpower to use these weapons to commit their crimes. I've got a couple IMs from people for you, Joe, if you've got a few more minutes for us.
Sure, go ahead.
Just so everybody knows, we're on the air with Joe DeBurgoles. He is our resident NRA board member, and he represents ARFCOM very well. His ARFCOM screen name is Direct Action. If you'd like to send him an IM, or you've got any questions for him, or there's some topics you want him to bring up, we have him on each week. You can IM him right off the website. Just log into your account and IM Direct Action, and you can get your questions straight to Joe. I have a comment from SDMan11890. He says, wonder if you could let Mr. DeBurgoles know I was in the NRA University talk that he came and spoke at the end, and I really appreciate all that he said about concealed carry on campus. Thank you.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much. The speech was well received. I had a great time. We had about 150 in the audience, and the young adults, I'll call them, in college were. It was great. It was really great. It was most of the time, John, when I speak before a group of people, they're anti-gun. And it's always nice when you get a room full of pro-gun participants. It was fantastic. We had a good time.
You don't feel like you're getting ready to be grilled, huh?
Oh, exactly. You know, it's always nice time to have to wear body armor when you walk in to give a speech.
You spoke a little bit about concealed carry on campus. Now, I graduated from the University of Utah where concealed carry, if you have a permit, a Utah concealed carry permit, you can carry on campus as a student. Now, is there a movement afoot that it sounds like we'll be able to get more universities and college campuses on board with this, or is this going to be an uphill struggle all the way?
Well, it's going to be a struggle because usually, as we all know, who attended universities, colleges, what have you throughout the country, even conservative states, they're basically a liberal bastion. A lot of times, normally what happens, anything that occurs on the campus itself is up to the president or the board of trustees. So each university, college, or school is going to have to make a decision on their own. Is there a movement, John? Yes. Are we supporting it? Without a doubt. Do we believe that's the way it should go? Most certainly. These are young adults. They're a great bunch of people. Most of us have been through that system, and we believe it will prevent a lot more things from happening. Gun-free zones, as we know all too well in Fort Hood, are targets of opportunity.
Yeah, okay? Gun-free zones are wide-open crime zones is what they end up being.
Most certainly.
Okay, we have a question from Black Tiger. He says, one question off the cuff here. I have heard the petition made to reinstate open carry in my home state of Florida. What is the chances that this will pass, and how is the petition going on with it?
Well, I understand. I'm currently a Florida holder myself. Florida is one of our best states in order to possess and keep and bear arms. Marion Hammer, our former NRA president, is down there with United Sportsmen of Florida. She does a great job. I would never bet against Marion Hammer. She's a fantastic advocate. She's a legislative dynamo. If this is going forward, and I will definitely research it more, but I believe if she's behind it, it's going to happen.
Okay. That's good news for everybody in Florida then. That's all the time we have for you tonight, Joe. If anyone has any questions for Joe DeBurgles, our resident NRA board member, please feel free to send him an IM at Direct Action. That's his screen name here at AR15.com. I want to thank you for being on with us each week, Joe.
Thank you, John. Have a great show.
Thanks. Okay, coming up next, we are going to have a Get to Know segment. We started these 2 weeks ago, and we ran out of time last week with Get to Know, but I have two good ones this week. Our first one is going to be Colt Gunner. He's a longtime member, and here's his Get to Know. Okay, this week on Get to Know, we have Colt Gunner. He's been a member since May of 2005, longtime standing member. He's also a life member, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Colt?
Yes, I am. I got into the first round.
I wish they'd offer that again. One. I tell you what, I would love to jump all over that. Anyway, you ready to get started with Get to Know?
I'll try.
Here we go. 9mm or 45?
Oh, 45.
Beans or no beans?
Beans.
Beans all the way, huh?
Beans Glock, all the way.
1911 or something else?
1911.
1911 guy. Okay. Are you married, single, or in a relationship?
Married.
Married, okay. Does your wife support your firearms activities and interests?
Oh, yes, she does.
Do you go shooting with her?
She does every once in a while. My kids, they really like shooting more than she does, but she does go out and shoot every once in a while.
That's great you do it with your kids, get that next generation hooked on it. What do you do for a living?
I work in the sheriff's department.
Oh, okay, law enforcement. What is your drink of choice?
Just a beer.
A nice cold beer. What brand? What's your brand? What's your go-to brand?
I drink Bud Light a lot.
Bud Light. Bud Light always won the Bud Bowl. That's what I love about Bud Light.
Yeah.
You remember the Bud Bowl?
Oh, yeah.
That was when commercials for the Super Bowl were good. I mean, this last year was just an abomination.
Yeah, they sucked. I wasn't too impressed with any of them.
Commercials, oh, man.
Yeah,
okay.
They sucked.
Who is your favorite poster on ARFCOM? There's got to be someone.
Septic Tank 13, he's out of Iowa, too. I enjoy his little.
Who is that?
Septic Tank 13, he's out of Iowa.
Okay. Sticking with a hometown guy, huh?
Yeah.
Who is your least favorite poster on ARFCOM? Maybe someone you have on your ignore list or something.
And put it in general, any troll. I really don't have one least favorite person. So
another vote
really
for the low post count troll.
Yeah. People that I go on the industry forums a lot, and a lot of them, you know, they whine and cry about something not working without actually having to talk to the manufacturer or something like that, trying to, you know, fix something instead of, you know, putting it out to the public. So I don't like those.
Okay. Who is your favorite ARFCOM mod or site staff member?
I like Goat Boy.
Goat Boy is the man, the resident code, the code monkey.
Code monkey,
okay.
Yes.
If you could live anywhere other than where you live now, where would that be?
Texas.
Texas, another vote for Texas.
I've
got to get down there again. I've only been to Texas once, but I was only there for a couple of days. I need to go spend some serious time down there because a lot of people love that place. What is your favorite firearm that you own?
My favorite, I'll be my Garand.
Ooh, a Garand. Good call.
Yep.
If you could only have one firearm that's legal for you to own and that you do not currently own, what would that be?
I want a .338 Lapua.
A .338
You know, that kind of round.
Something big, huh?
Yeah, something big, you know. Here in Iowa, we suck on, you know, class threes.
Oh, yeah, that's I didn't think about that in Iowa, yes. Okay, when was the last time you went shooting?
Well, actually, I went hunting here about 2 weeks ago. That's about the last time I shot with all the snow and everything. We really haven't had a chance just to go out recreational shooting. So,
did you get anything hunting?
No, I did not.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I got skunked last year myself. let's see here. Have you ever met a fellow ARFCOMer in real life?
Oh, yes.
And what was your impression of them? You don't have to
like
who it was.
Yeah, no, I like them. We usually, the Iowa group, we have a gun show in Des Moines, and a lot of times we get together after the gun show for supper and stuff like that, just a little meet and greet type of thing. So.
Oh, cool. For all the guys in the Iowa hometown form?
Yep.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Okay. What is your favorite non-GD section of the forums?
You know, the law enforcement, the fire department, EMS.
Brothers of the Shield?
Yeah, Brothers of the Shield, yeah.
Cool. I got to go check that out a little more often. I've been in there a couple of times, but I need to go really check that one out. Okay. What was the first firearm you ever shot?
I've been my dad's little 22. I think it was a Fieldmaster.
How old were you?
I was about 8.
Oh, good. You started young. I like it when we start young. It seems like when you start young, you just love shooting for your whole life. You just
I do. I really do enjoy shooting, and that's why my boy is shot really young. And my daughter, she graduates this year. She's shot maybe, you know, since she's about 10. So.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So what would you do if she brings home a guy that doesn't like guns?
Well, well, first of all, I always meet them and say I own guns, and we'll see what they say from there. Then if they don't like it, then she knows what my opinion of them are.
So she brings home dates, and you're there cleaning your 1911 there on the kitchen table, right?
Yeah, it just happens to be out, need to be cleaned about that time. So it's funny how that works.
I have a teenage daughter myself, so trust me, I know the feeling. Did you ever get rid of a firearm and regret it?
I've only gotten rid of one firearm. It was a Winchester shotgun, but I traded it for another shotgun that I could use for deer hunting. So, honestly, no, I have not.
Yeah,
but everything else, you know, that's the only gun I've gotten rid of. Everything else I'm kind of, like, hoarding.
And this is our last question for the day. If you were elected President of the United States, what is the first thing you'd do in office?
Honestly, take away, you know, people that, you know, that get benefits from the government that, you know, for not being able to work that can work, you know.
So you'd do your part.
If you can work,
entitlement class,
work. Huh? Otherwise, you're not going to get the benefits, you know.
You'd do your part to get rid of the entitlement class, huh?
Oh, yep.
I can't say there's anything wrong with that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Get to Know with Colt Gunner, and we'll see you next time here on Get to Know. Okay, that was Colt Gunner on Get to Know. If you would like to be on Get to Know, feel free to send me an IM. We do the recordings for those usually on Friday afternoons or Saturday afternoons. So if you want to be on Get to Know, feel free to send me an IM. Now we are going to go with Chris Marsh. He's the president and owner of a company called Three Gun Stuff. So crack yourself open a nice cold drink and relax and kick back because we're going to talk about three gun shooting. Chris, how are you today?
I'm great, John. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you on. I don't know where to get started here. What I really want to talk about is how did you get your company started? What made you decide, you know what, I've been three gun shooting and I kind of like this, but I'm going to start my own company.
Well, that's a good question. I've been participating in various shooting sports for about 8 years now, 7-8 years, and had been looking to start a business and looked at a variety of things and decided to, you know, go with what I enjoy, do something that I do for no money and try and make some money with it. And so I found a few products that I thought were unique and different and set up a website and a company and started selling them, and it's been going from there.
Okay. Let's talk shooting now. How did you get started in three gun? What made you decide I'm going to go try this three gun competition? Had you been competing in regular pistol competition, then decided I'm going to move up to three gun, or how did you get involved?
Well, yeah, you know, let me start with how I started pistol shooting. That was where I started with competition, and I didn't grow up shooting at all, basically, other than, you know, in Boy Scouts or whatever. My family didn't own any guns, and when I was like 22 or so, I bought my first pistol just kind of on a whim and got tired of just going and shooting cans, you know, and so it really was just looking for an arena, a place to play with my toy, if you will. And so I got started shooting USPSA or IPSC is commonly referred to, and IDPA shooting. And those are lots of fun, but it's just pistol. And so then I have some friends that shot this crazy three-gun thing, and so I decided to try that out.
Okay. Why don't you take us through an average three-gun day when you go to an actual competition? What you get your range bag, you've got your – now, for those that don't know, three-gun is pistol, shotgun, and rifle, right? And you compete in all three events, right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, well, so for the average day, you know, really it starts the day before with, you got all kinds of equipment you gotta fill the trunk of your car with. So you'll have at least one rifle, at least one shotgun, at least one pistol, ammo for all of them, and all the various accessories, magazines, holsters, belts, all that type of stuff. And you'll show up at a match and, you'll be assigned to what they call a squad, which is just a group of people that are going to shoot together all day, and it'll be, you know, 8 or 10 people. And match will have various what they call stages, and a stage is just one course of fire set up. And at a typical three-gun match, you'll have some stages that use just one gun, one of those three, and then most of the stages will use two or three, all three of those guns in shooting the stage. And you'll engage paper type targets that are scored based on your accuracy. You'll engage often steel targets that you'll have to knock over or move. And you'll also often engage clay pigeon type targets, which may be stationary or maybe moving, and you'll be engaging targets anywhere from, you know, a few yards away all the way out to 500 or 600 yards for some of the real long three-gun type stages using a rifle.
Oh, wow, all the way out to 500 or 600 yards. That's a long ways.
Yeah, that's the longest stages that are out there. You know, the most common local type three-gun matches around the country, you're shooting out to maybe 200-300 yards, something like that.
Okay, so you're competing for time, is that correct?
Yeah, you're competing both based on time and your level of accuracy. There's different types of rules that three-gun matches can be run under. Some of them, it's just your time, and you'll receive time penalty, basically, if you don't hit a target. Or then there's other rules that use a formula where they take the points that you score, so how accurate you are, you take your total number of points and you divide it by your speed. So there's a constant sort of struggle between going as fast as you can but still having a high level of accuracy.
Oh, outstanding. We're on with Chris Marsh. He's from threegunstuff.com. Go check it out. He's got a lot of great products there on his website. And he's actually going to give away some free stuff today. So if you would like some free accessories, some free firearm accessories, call the show with a question for Chris, and we'll see if we can get you set up with something. One thing we talked about when I spoke with you earlier in the week, Chris, was you told me about how actually these gun shooting competitions are kind of the cutting edge for equipment and accessories before they get adopted by law enforcement and military. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you look at the equipment that's come from the practical shooting or action shooting type of sports, a lot of that trickles down to the military and law enforcement because the priorities are really the same. For competition, you want something that is dependable, you know, reliable, and that helps you compete, i.e. helps you be faster and more accurate. And really, those are top priorities for military and law enforcement as well. You got to have something that's dependable, and you got to have something that's useful to you getting rounds on target more efficiently. And so, you know, if you look at, like, optical-type sights, aim points, and Seymour-type sights, those are things that were really used very significantly and developed, at least in part, through competition. And so a lot of those things do end up trickling down to military and law enforcement. It's really a testing ground, if you will, for a lot of those, as you said, cutting-edge type of accessories.
Okay. We have a caller online for you. Westmark from Vermont is on line B1. Westmark, how are you today? Oh, he was on line B1. Maybe he's not now. Okay. We've got lines open. Feel free to call in. We have some great accessories we're going to give away for free. Looks like we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different things we're going to give away today. And they also will all include a free T-shirt from 3-Gun Stuff LLC. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. That's kind of a neat T-shirt that came from a competition that we sponsored that was put on by some soldiers over in Iraq. They actually put together, I think it was a 2-day 3-gun competition. They had guys from all the services as well as contractors competing. So it's got the logo on the match from that. It's really cool. So we'll include one of those with each of the prizes that we send out.
That's really cool, actually. For those that don't know, where I'm with Chris Marsh, his screen name is 3-Gun Stuff LLC. He's an industry partner of AR15.com. So always support our industry partners, ladies and gentlemen. Always support them. They help support the website and keep ARFCOM what it is. Okay, let's go back. Westmark, he's on line B2. Are you there, Westmark?
Yeah, hi, John and Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Well, I've done some IPSC competition, and I kind of had to stop doing it because of, how expensive ammo got and how hard it was to find. I was wondering how much ammo I should expect to go through in a days of 3-gun shooting.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the most expensive parts of this sport is ammo. And, you know, there's no way around it. There's some good ways to reduce your ammo usage in terms of training and practicing, but for an actual match, obviously you got to have it. And so it really depends on how many stages the match will have. For a typical, what I would call local match, just one that happens every month around here, I'll take about 100 rounds of rifle ammunition, about 75 rounds of pistol ammunition, about 50 rounds of birdshot and about 10 slugs. And all that gives me enough so that if I have to do any extra shooting, if I have to reshoot a stage or lend some ammo to a buddy or something, that I should have enough.
Okay. Westmark, I want you to IM your information. We're going to send you out a pack of the red holster knob adjustments from 3GunStuff.com. If you want to check those out, go to 3GunStuff.com/knobs. You'll check it out there for Blade Tech holsters. They're a really nice little accessory for a Blade Tech holster. You came up with that on your own, Chris?
No, it's actually a friend of mine that makes them, and I just, you know, he was just kind of selling them locally, and I started selling them on my website, and they've been real successful, yeah.
Okay. And you're also going to get a T-shirt as well, Westmark. Thanks for calling in. He's a good supporter of Radio Free ARFCOM. Now, Chris, I've never shot a competition ever. I've got a rifle. I've got a shotgun. I've got a handgun. What can I do to get started? And I mean, it sounds pretty intimidating. You look on TV and you watch these guys blaze through some of these ranges, and it's like, holy cow! I'd go in there and make an absolute fool out of myself. What advice can you give a beginner, and how can someone get involved in this without the intimidation factor?
Yeah, thanks, John. I think you're pointing out one of the primary factors that I've identified of why people don't try competition. My suggestion to you would first be that, you know, no matter how you do, you're going to have fun. I mean, when's the last time you went to the range and shot and you didn't have fun, right?
Right.
So it's going to be fun.
As old Dana says, shooting stuff is fun.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And so if you think about your average range session where you go and you just shoot some targets or whatever, that's fun. Well, think about that to a factor of about 10, and that's what this sport really is. And so there's no way around, you got to do it for the first time. And so, you know, the primary thing that I would say is, if you can find somebody, either somebody that you know or by finding somebody through ARFCOM or other internet forums that knows about competition in your area, and I can talk more about that later, about places to do that, that can tell you, you know, okay, here's where the matches are, and just kind of buddy up with them. That's how most folks that are successful in competition shooting move up, is they find somebody that's helpful and will buddy up with them like that, and that can kind of help you through a little bit, you know, and give you an idea of what to expect and can hold your hand a little bit during the day. That combined with knowing your firearms, knowing how they operate, knowing how to load and unload your gun, knowing how to be reasonably accurate with it, knowing how to draw your pistol from a holster, those type of just basic manipulations, knowing how to do those things and practicing a little bit, you know, of dry fire in your home or at the range with no ammunition, just so you're really familiar with those guns, that's what's important. In terms of actual shooting, you know, with a pistol, if you can shoot, you know, a reasonable-sized target out to, say, 20 yards or so, you'll be just fine. With a shotgun, you might have to shoot slugs out to 20 or 25 yards. And with a rifle, like I said, about out to a couple hundred yards, if you know your zeros, that's what's important. The good news is that the targets that we shoot at are never, you know, really super teeny tiny targets. There are certainly disciplines out there that require a lot more accuracy than we require. It's practical shooting, so it's combat based. So, you know, just having a reasonable level of marksmanship is all it requires really to be able to do it the first time. So doing those things and knowing that you're going to have fun, and when you get there, just take a deep breath, take it all in, and enjoy yourself, and know that the first time's the hardest, and the next time it'll get better, and it's always going to be fun, you know?
Okay. Now, people hear competition, and they think, oh, I'm going to go there. I'm going to be all by myself. How are the average three-gun shooters with each other and with the new guys?
You know, the thing is that it's a relatively tiny community of people, and so they are always welcoming of new people wanting to try out the sport. And so you would just be amazed at the level of camaraderie among people and the amount of excitement that they have for new shooters and the length that they'll go to help those shooters out. You know, I mean, people are always lending out equipment you know, more importantly, advice to people. I can't think of ever asking somebody for advice about something, even now as someone who knows a little bit about it and being blown off. People always want to help out, you know. So I understand that it can be intimidating, but the fact is when you try it, you'll find people that are extremely welcoming and want to help you out.
Okay. We've got Jeff on line B1. Jeff, you're on with Chris Marsh.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
I'm good, Jeff. How about yourself?
Man, I'm doing good. So I got a question for you about a shotgun part. 8-inch barrel or longer in the gun, and would you recommend a pump or a tempo?
You broke up at the end there. I got the 18-inch barrel part. What was the last part?
Would the 18-inch barrel better or a longer or a semi-auto or pump work better?
Oh, I got you. Okay. Well, the good news is that you can use either a semi-auto or a pump. There are different divisions for different types of equipment, and so you don't have to go out and buy one, you know, to be able to play the game. With that said, it's easier, it's less work to use a semi-auto shotgun, and especially for a first-timer or somebody who's new to the sport, having to think about fewer things like pumping your shotgun makes it easier. In terms of barrel length, the 18 is, it'll work if that's what you got. It's not a problem. If you're going out to buy a shotgun, I would recommend at least a 20 or 22-inch barrel in a semi-automatic shotgun. So that would be like a Remington 1100, or a Benelli M2, or a Winchester SX3 or the FN, SLP. Those are all real popular semi-autos. But, you know, for all you guys listening that have a 870 sitting in your closet, you know, that works just great too. And then, like I said, there's a special division just for pump shotguns.
Jeff, what's your screen name?
Yeah, that's what I've got that is me.
What's your screen name, Jeff?
Your dad.
Okay, why don't you send me your information? And we are going to send you out a flap sling loop adapter plate from 3gunstuff.com, as well as one of the T-shirts. Go ahead and talk about that sling loop adapter plate a little bit, Chris.
Yeah, it's a really cool product. It's actually a customer of mine that makes them and asked me about selling them for them. It replaces the end plate that goes on the back of the receiver on an AR that holds the detent spring in for the rear takedown pin. And it has a built-in sling loop on it. So you have a spot to put your sling on without having to add anything else to your gun. Got them on the website. They're pretty cheap, and they work great. So.
Yeah, well, you got some really cool products, I have to admit. Some really interesting stuff there. Let's go to another caller. Black Tiger from Florida on line B3. You're on with Chris Marsh, Radio Free ARFCOM.
Hey, hi, Chris. How you doing?
I'm great, thanks.
Listen, I got a question. I've been interested in getting into clean gun matches. I'm former military, and I'm currently in law enforcement. So taking into competitive shooting would be something that would greatly enhance my capability in terms of safe gun handling, not to mention getting into the competitive aspect of it. Now, one of the things that I've been toiling a little bit is the choices that I would have in terms of building a custom AR for competitive shooting. I've seen hundreds of different types of configurations, everything from your standard 20-inch to 18-inch designated rifles with custom stainless steel barrels. And my question is, would be basically, what is pretty much the standard when it comes to, let's say, stainless steel barrel? What would in terms of, like, the weight, it would be an H-bar, medium, government profile, pencil length, and in terms of rifling, what type of rifling will suit best the competitive type of AR?
Yeah, that's a great question. The most, you'll see lots of different things out there when you're competing. There's no one gun that everybody has. The most common thing you'll see among those guns, though, is typically an 18-inch barrel. Longer is okay. It enhances accuracy, but it's unnecessary and adds weight typically. And in a medium weight type of a profile, the most important thing when you're selecting a barrel or an upper or a whole gun is the accuracy of the barrel. So you're going to see barrels that are not chrome-lined, and you're going to see barrels that the twist weight will vary, and really it just dictates what kind of ammo you feed it. But you're going to see a lot of 1 in 9 twist barrels. And, again, they'll be in an 18-inch medium type of weight. And the other key thing is that they have a free-floated fore-end on them. Because that greatly enhances accuracy when you're leaning the gun on things, which you're going to do a lot of. The lightness of the medium weight will allow you to shoot it offhand or in weird type of positions. There's several manufacturers that make great stuff in that type of a gun. Maybe the most popular one is a company called JP Enterprises out of Minnesota. They make super, super accurate guns that happen to function well, too.
Oh, that's pretty good. Also, another follow-up before I let somebody else.
Sure.
Also, in terms of trigger packs, I mean, I've seen a lot of things about two-stage trigger packs, and the way I've seen it, not all of them are the same. I mean, you got some of those that are already pre-built that are basically drop-in, while you have others that are basically you have to put them together. And particularly with the issues pertaining to durability of these trigger packs in comparison to your standard military or civilian trigger pack, what would be your opinion on it?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, after a real accurate barrel and a free-floated forend, a trigger is maybe the most important upgrade that, that you can make. You know, if you had a gun and you could only do one upgrade to it, I would suggest a trigger first. And you're right, there's a lot of choices out there. Just to clarify what you're saying, there's some triggers that are, these are, you know, lightweight triggers that are in their own housing and then drop into the receiver. Then there are other ones that it's just a regular trigger, like in an AR, that's specialized to have a lighter pull, but you have to fit the trigger, basically, based on the variances in the size of the receiver, and that takes a little bit of work. I've used both of the ones that you have to fit and the ones that you don't. They both work equally well in my experience in terms of durability and how good the trigger is. It just one you have to put a little more work into. The second question is it a two-stage or a single-stage trigger? A two-stage meaning it has a heavier sort of pre-travel or pre-pull and then a lighter secondary pull. They both have their merits. I mean, I've used both, and I like both for different reasons. My best suggestion is to just try both if you can and see which one works best for you. The trigger I've used the most and I have in the most of my guns is a JP drop-in single-stage trigger, and I've got several of them, and they work great. So, you know, ask around for people that have used various ones and try them if you can is my best suggestion.
Well, thank you very much. That's all very good. That's all the information I need. I mean,
thanks for calling in.
Thanks for calling in, Tiger. Why don't you send me your IM me your information, and we are going to send you out one of Chris's Gamer Grip vertical foregrips for AR15.com. Why don't you talk about the Gamer Grip a little bit, Chris?
Yeah, the Gamer Grip's actually made by an AR15.com member, and it's a vertical, short, stubby vertical foregrip. There's lots of those around, but one side of it, the front side, can be the front or the back, is milled flat, so it's really helpful if you're shooting against a barrier type of a situation, which is something we do in three gun a lot. So it can be turned either way to take advantage of that
flush
or
up
not.
Against a barrier.
I'm sorry?
It'll fit flush up against a barrier.
Yeah, because the front of it is flat. Or if you don't want to do that, you turn around, and it's just like a regular vertical foregrip fits on a Picatinny rail, you know?
Okay, really cool. You can check out all of his products at www.3gunstuff.com. Okay, we have time for one more caller, Scrap5000, one of our good supporters of Radio Free ARFCOM. You're on with Chris Marsh.
Hey, Chris. It's a real pleasure speaking with you. I can't believe how much your sport has expanded and blown up. I mean, I remember the first time I heard about it was only about a year or a year and a half ago in one of the gun mags, and it just seemed like nobody really knew what it was. And congratulations on that, first of all. And secondly, really, a couple of questions, actually. First is, live in New York, and every time you hear about these competitions, it always seems that, you know, it's out west somewhere, down south. I was hoping that you could let me know if there's anything that you know of. I know you said you talk about it later, but anything around New York, specifically close to New York City, number one. And number two, is there any kind of skill that you find that really transfers best, you know, from something you do every day, like, say, a hunting skill or maybe a law enforcement type thing where you train a lot, transfers well into this kind of competition? Is there any sort of field that you see that you find does best and wins a lot of these competitions?
Sure. You know, because of the size of range that is desired for a three-gun competition of being able to shoot rifles at longer distances, there's more of those, obviously, in the western part of the country. But there are matches on the East Coast. I'm not from there, so I'm not intimately familiar with them. The closest ones I know about for sure are in the Virginia area, but there's also a big match called the Blue Ridge Mountain match in Kentucky, which obviously is not right next door to New York, but it's closer than, say, California. The best resource for finding matches, first I would suggest, would be the hometown forums on ARFCOM, as well as the competition forums. You're bound to find people that can help you find local three gun or pistol matches and that know about them. In terms of your second question, tell me if I'm not answering it correctly, but you know, the great thing about competition is that it doesn't teach you the tactical side of using a firearm, it certainly teaches you how to manipulate a firearm in all aspects under pressure very quickly. And so that means loading your gun, drawing your gun from a holster, moving.
Oh, are you still there, Chris?
No, I think we lost him.
Oh, we may have lost Chris. We'll get him back here shortly. We'll get him back here shortly. We have the super producer Seth on it right now. Why don't you send me your information, Scrap, and we'll get you out one of those gamer grips from 3gunstuff.com. I encourage everyone, please support our industry sponsors that come on the show. There's a lot of good products out there, and Chris was willing to come on and give us a whole lot of information about shooting 3-gun, which is something I personally have never done. I've seen it on TV, and I was a little bit scared to do it until I got here and talked to Chris. He kind of assuaged some of my fears. Real quick, while I have some time, I want to thank Merrill. He keeps all the Radio Free ARFCOM discussion threads updated with links about what we're talking about, links to the websites and whatnot. A quick programming note while we're getting Chris back online. We will not have a Stump the Deej this week. Our contestant backed out at the last moment. If you would like to be a contestant for Stump the Deej, maybe you don't have a membership, a team membership, or your team membership is about to expire and you want a chance to win a free one, here's a chance to get a free membership renewal or a free membership if you're not a member, just to come on and try to Stump the Deej. If you have any questions about that, I am me at radio_free_ARFCOM, and I will take care of you, get you on with Stump the Deej. Chris, are you back?
I'm back. I don't know what happened. Sorry.
That's okay. We have a little bit of technical difficulty occasionally when we drop a call, but that's okay. You were talking about where to go to get involved.
Oh, okay. The first place is on air15.com. The hometown forums is a great way to find local people that know about competitions. In the same way through the competition forums, which is under the training area, you can find people as well. Just say, hey, I'm looking for competition in wherever. And then I'd like to plug another website, Brian, B-R-I-A-N, Enos, E-N-O-S, .com, all one word, is like the central hub for competition shooting info on the Internet. And so you'll be able to find great info there about finding local competitions as well as, you know, more info than you could ever imagine about board and equipment and on and on and on. So it's a great resource as well.
Hey, when is your next competition that you'll be in, Chris?
Well, there's some coming up this weekend, but I don't know about the weather. The next big match I'll be at is in the end of March at the Superstition Mystery Mountain 3-gun match, which is in Mesa, Arizona.
Oh, okay. Sounds fun. Hey, I appreciate you taking some time out to be with us today. Thanks for giving away some free stuff to our callers. ARFCOMers always love free stuff. And I encourage everyone to check out your website, www.3gunstuff.com.
Yeah, that's the number 3gunstuff, all one word, .com. Thanks for having me on, John.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
Bye.
Okay, right now it's everybody's favorite Box of Truth. We're going to go straight to Old Painless.
Let's open the Box of Truth. Here is Old Painless.
Hello, everyone. This is Old Painless with the Box of Truth. Today I'm going to talk about a great gun-related hobby, collecting curio and relic firearms. Curio and relic firearms, or C&R firearms as they're usually called, are weapons that meet certain guidelines. And to really take advantage of this hobby, a person needs to apply for a C&R firearms license. To get a C&R firearm license, you have to obtain and fill out an application and pay a $30 fee for a 3-year license. The requirements for obtaining the license are really not very burdensome, and the cost is well worth it. If you're interested, go to the C&R forum on AR15.com and you can find out just how to do all this. CNR weapons are defined as being weapons that derive a substantial part of their monetary value from the fact that they are novel, rare, or because of their association with some historical figure, period, or event. Also, the firearm must be at least 50 years old or older. The BATF publishes a list of all firearms that are considered to be CNR weapons. Many firearms that were used in World War I and World War II are on the CNR list. These old rifles and some pistols are now being sold by governments that have decided that they'll never issue these weapons again and are selling them to the market. Some of these old rifles are truly amazing in their quality. A good example is a Swiss K-31 straight-pull bolt-action rifle. This action is so finely made, it's just amazing. The rifles are no longer used by the Swiss and have been on the market for many years. It has been estimated that if a manufacturer were to set up this fine yet complicated action and rifle nowadays, it would cost several thousand dollars per rifle to produce. These rifles are so accurate that it's just almost unbelievable. Other rifles, like the Mosin 9130 bolt action, has a rougher fit and finish, but they still shoot great. The Russians believed that quantity had a quality all its own and made millions of these things. The ammunition for the Mosins is still fairly inexpensive and readily available. Prices have gone up recently, but even a couple of years ago, you could get a very nice CNR rifle for less than $200. There's still a lot of great rifles available, such as Mosins, K-31s, British Enfields, and German and Swedish Mausers. Occasionally, a great pistol will be available. A couple of years ago, some Systema 1911 pistols came on the CNR market and were available for $250. That's a great price for a functioning 1911 pistol. And the great part is that with the CNR license, you can buy directly from the importers and have the weapon shipped right to your door. There's nothing better than having the brown truck of happiness drop a box off at your door that has a rifle in it. Many of these old guns will be covered in Cosmoline, but that's an interesting part of the hobby to clean them up. And after all that grease, you usually find a weapon that is as clean as the day it was made. Many internet shooter supply businesses will also give you a discount if you send them a copy of your CNR license. This alone will usually pay for the cost of the license. Cheap guns, relatively cheap ammo, how are you going to beat it? You can't. You not only get the pleasure of cleaning up and restoring these old war horses, but then you get to take them to the range and enjoy shooting them. And as we all know, shooting stuff is fun.
Yes, we all know shooting stuff is fun. That's Old Painless. You can check out his website, www.theboxotruth.com. I was just looking over the forums here today. I wanted people to know there has been apparently some resolution somewhat to the Cavalry Arms raid by the ATF. You want to check out that thread. It's in general discussion. It's right there on the front page. You can't miss it. Cavalry Arms loses FFL to ATF. An owner admits to illegally selling 40 guns. It's an interesting article. I don't have time to read it right now, but go check it out. Apparently, Cavalry Arms has lost their license to produce firearms. Now we're on with John May from the IDPA, the International Defensive Pistol Association. John, how are you today?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
Outstanding. Thanks for coming on with us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to do it.
Why don't you talk a little bit about the IDPA, what it is, and what you guys do as an organization?
Well, IDPA was the International Defensive Pistol Association, was founded, oh, I guess almost 14 years ago now, to bring pistol shooting back to real-world sort of scenarios. You know, one of the standing principles is, could this really happen? You won't have Attack of the Killer Zombies or, you know, pumpkin heads or anything like that. It is real-world self-defense scenarios. The competitors have to use real-world equipment from real-world holsters, and it's recommended that it be done from concealment. So you get some real-world practice doing what those of us that carry concealed do every day.
Okay, so all your competition is done from drawing from a concealed carry situation, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there are obviously standards that are tests that are designed to be, you know, test a particular function, whether it be reloads or one hand, you know, left hand or right hand shots or head shots only. But for the most part, scenarios are based on real world concealed carry, this could happen sort of things.
Okay. What is your role with the IDPA?
Well, actually, I'm filling in for Robert, who is their membership director. I'm actually the sales director for Wilson Combat. But my history with IDPA is I started shooting it right after the organization started. Had the misfortune or good fortune, depending on how you look at it, to be four-time national match director for the IDPA National Championship.
Okay. And say I'm just a beginner, never shot competition before, which I haven't.
Okay.
We just had on a three-gun expert, Chris Marsh from threegunstuff.com. Now, if I'm brand new to competition shooting, how do I get into it? And what are some of the – because it's intimidating. You watch TV, you see these guys blaze through these courses, and it's like, I'm not going to go out there and make a fool out of myself. What are some tips you could give to guys who they haven't ever shot competition, but they want to, and how can they overcome some of those hurdles?
The first thing is, you know, these guys won't have race gear on. They won't have magazines encircling their bodies. One of the rules is you can have no more than two magazines on your belt. You can shoot an IDPA competition with three magazines. The scenarios are limited to 18 rounds, so it's based on real-world stuff. You can use any sort of, you know, standard daily carry holster, and Glocks are widely used throughout them. Where to do it, you just go to any local club or indoor range. It's becoming more and more popular in indoor. And, you know, it's hard to get over those first-time jitters. I know the first IDPA match I ever went to, my only regret is that I watched and I didn't shoot because that's one less that I could shoot. You know, I don't know how you overcome that stuff. It's just part of life. Anytime you try anything new, there's going to be some reticence or some, you know, you're not ready to go do it. It's really simple, straightforward. The courses of fire should make perfect sense. They're not designed to be a math test. It's a simple, when the buzzer goes off, you can figure out what to do. Granted, I've been doing it a long time, so it looks simpler to me now than it did the first time I shot it. But it's all about fun at the end of the day. I mean, you know, rounds down range are better than any day that you don't.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that. How does the scoring work? If you go to an IDPA match, are you going to get matched up against one of these top-notch pros? And then are there different class divisions? Is there a handicap system? How exactly does that work?
It's worked on divisions and on weapon type. Like, for example, if you're shooting a Glock, an ordinary Glock, that's stock service pistol. And from there, there are marksmen, there are sharpshooters, experts, and then masters. You are not scored against those people. They're actually competing against other masters and inevitably competing against themselves.
Right.
It's a different – the way it's scored is really simple. The target has a zero, which is the head and then the circle in the center, and then outside that's a minus one, and the edges is minus three, a miss is minus five. The way it works is you take your raw time, and for every point down, you get a half a second added to the time. So it's really accuracy critical. But it's also a real-world accuracy. You've got plenty of zero zone and plenty of one zone.
Okay. And what group do you compete in?
I'm actually an expert.
Okay. And you compete in all the different divisions?
I'm sorry?
You compete in all the different divisions, or is there a...
Yeah, I have. I've actually competed revolver, stock service, ESP. My favorite is CDP. Obviously, at Wilson, we build 1911, so... I spend most of my time shooting a 1911, which is custom defense pistol.
Okay.
I held the ranking of expert. I actually attained it at a national championship by beating all the people in my division then and moving to expert. And to be honest with you, the more I'm in this business, it seems like the less I get to shoot. I haven't shot a class fire in some time.
Just so everybody knows, the website is www.idpa.com. How does one get started? What do we do if we want to compete? Is there a local chapter in each state, or how does that work?
Yeah, most every state has a local chapter, some of them more than one chapter. You can go on the website and look for local clubs that are hosting events. Contact those guys and get a schedule of events. They're all over the country and, in fact, all over the world. IDPA is now truly international. We hold our nationals, and we've been kicking around the idea of calling it the World Championship because people come from all over the world to compete in it. The way I started, I went to a local club. I'd heard about it, went to a local club, saw the first match and shot the second one, which was the following day. You can show up with the gear you have now. Revolvers are real popular. Glock is probably the most popular because that's what most people have. All the way up to, you know, your pull-out blown custom 1911.
When you say custom, what are the differences between a custom and a stock?
Well, a stock service pistol ideally is a Glock, like you would go to the gun store and buy. You take it out of the box, and that's what you compete with. You can do some sight work and, you know, some functionality work, but the idea was that it would be the same gun that Joe customer would walk into a gun store and buy and then show up at a match to shoot it. Enhanced service pistol is a gun like that that's been enhanced outside the parameters, like the grip's been changed. What I mean by changed is the area's been reduced, the grip angle's been changed. Anything that's not stock then would go into enhanced. That also fits the single action guns in 9 and 40 Smith & Wesson. CDP is really designed to be a 1911 45 caliber based division. That's a holdover from the old days when the single stack 45 was king. Well, that CDP gives a place for that to still go and compete.
We've got a lot of 45 shooters on AR15.com, so I know for a fact that they're going to be interested. We got a lot of Glock people as well. If I'm going to my very first competition, what do I need to bring with me?
Well, usually 100 rounds of ammo will get you through most any competition. Three magazines, you can get by with one mag pouch, a holster, and your gun. I would recommend taking some sort of concealed carry garment. It can be a shirt or a vest or whatever you like. I've seen people over the years, there used to be a guy that shot most of the national championships that wore a tweed jacket. And, you know, it could be 100 degrees, he'd have a plaid tweed jacket on. It was sort of comical, but that's what he wore every day, so that's what he shot from. And like all sports, you see all the extremes. You see the guys that are pushing the edge to go as fast as they can go and do as well as they can do, and then you see the guys that are pure tactics that want to use every perfect tactic that they can master those tactics that they use every day. And that's good. I mean, there's a place for both of those people in the sport.
Yeah, it sounds like shooting competition is really something that can help someone get their own personal skills to rapidly increase. Did you find that when you started shooting competition that you're still...
Oh, certainly. I mean, where else are you going to go get to try that sort of thing? I know there's indoor ranges across the country that they don't allow you to draw in there. The only way to master the skill of drawing is to do it. And you can, you know, in your dry fire practice, you can put draw and presentation in as a part of that. But there's nothing quite like draw, presenting, and then feeling the recoil of the gun as you fire the shot. And target acquisition, there is no better way to work on your target acquisition skills than to fire live rounds. There's just no better way.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. You spoke earlier about members from foreign countries. Can you name a few countries and some of the people you've seen come and compete?
Italy, Slovenia, Germany, which is interesting because I don't know that they can have a defensive pistol organization in Germany, but these guys were members. Two good friends of mine come over from Great Britain who also can't have pistol competitions there, but they're members and they come over every year. I understand there are several South American countries that have started up and are getting going. It's complicated for those folks out there, but it's all over the world. I mean, you just go on the website, you can see all the countries that are listed. I understand we have a club in Russia now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that, would you? But
no, you definitely wouldn't. And also, you wouldn't maybe think England either, where it's just so difficult to obtain and keep firearms. What about Australia? Do you have Australian competitors?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. Now, do I need to be a member to shoot an IDPA event? Is there a membership fee or anything like that I need to pay to get involved?
Well, to become a member, yes. There is a membership fee. It's $35 annually. They've got all sorts of three-year programs and all that sort of stuff. You can go shoot your first match without being a member, but we ask that you join after you shoot your first match. You know, make sure it's the thing for you. The organization is all about competition shooting, so it's a great organization to support regardless.
We had a caller in the last segment. We were talking about three-gun. He commented on how he was amazed at how three-gun competition has just exploded over the last year or two. Have you noticed the same thing with the IDPA?
Well, we're just fixing to introduce three-gun. The rules are done, and we're fixing to announce that it's going to I don't know what the time frame is. That's more of a Robert question, but it's soon to come. And, yes, three-gun is taking off. The ammo shortage seemed to slow it down a little bit, but since that's starting to recover, I think you're going to see a real move of it to the forefront.
So IDPA will be hosting three-gun competitions as well?
Yep. We're trying to get that formed up and going now. I don't know when he's got the first match to be scheduled, but the rules are in place. I think there's some final touches and things to do, but, yes, it's a perfect fit for IDPA if you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Real-world guns and real-world tactics is just a perfect fit.
It makes perfect sense. This is John May. Oh, go ahead, John. Go ahead.
One of the problems with three-gun competition is every organization has their own rules. And I've been an avid shooter three-gun for some time, and it's very difficult. It's almost like check the rules before you leave to make sure your gear will meet whatever demands they have.
Right, right. Hopefully there'll be some type of universal rule system come about once you guys get involved as well, since you guys are one of the larger organizations.
We sure hope so, yeah.
All right, John, I appreciate you being on. John May from the IDPA, talking a little competitive shooting. I encourage everybody who has not shot competitive, including myself, to try to get out and get those guns out of the safe and get them on the range and get some good training and some good quality competition in. Thanks a lot for being on with us, John.
You bet. Let's go burn some powder.
Let's do it. All right. That was John May from the IDPA. Right now, we're going to have another Get to Know segment. This is going to be Hardshell. He's one of the moderators for the Religion Forum and a very interesting guy. You'll get to know him right now. Okay, this time on Get to Know, we have another Lifetime member. He's been registered since September 11th, 2002, the anniversary of the World Trade Center attacks and the terrorist attacks on the Pentagon. His name is Hardshell. Are you there, Hardshell?
I am. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you here. Are you ready to answer some questions for us?
Certainly.
Okay, here we go. Let's start off with the important ones. 9mm or 45?
Well, I have several of both. I love both, but if I could only keep one, it'd be 9mm.
Beans or no beans?
Beans, definitely beans.
Oh, wow. He's from the South, too, and he likes beans in his chili. Number three, Glock 1911 or something else?
Well, again, I have several Glocks. I have several 1911s, but my primary carry is a G19, so if it came down to one, it'd have to be the Glock.
There it is. Married, in a relationship, or single?
I'm happily married, 15 years now, 3 small children.
Oh, outstanding. Does your wife support or participate in your firearms activities?
Absolutely. She actually shoots and carries every day and hunts, has her own guns.
Oh, that's why the marriage has lasted so long right there.
Oh, yeah.
How about
great.
The kids?
The children, well, my son is 6, and my twin girls will be 3 next month. So they do have some of their own guns, believe it or not, of course, locked away until they get a little bit bigger. They're also all 3 life members of the NRA. Yeah, I bought them life memberships on their very first birthday, each of them.
Oh, wow. Happy birthday, huh? That's a good
yeah.
Nice little birthday present. What do you do for a living?
I'm the director of a state agency here that we review all of the non-medical fatalities to children in the state with an eye toward prevention.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. So what is the number one cause for fatality for children?
Well, vehicular, clearly, above and beyond. I think half the preventable deaths we review are vehicular deaths. And then unsafe infant sleeping, believe it or not, is the second one.
So as far as vehicular, is it because kids weren't properly secured in their car seats, or what is it?
Well, when I say child deaths, by child, I mean anybody under 18. That's the way our statute reads. So we've got teen drivers in there, and then we also have small children who are either not fully restrained or they're unrestrained.
Okay. And then as far as the infant sleep, what is that? Just like a sudden infant death syndrome, or is there a certain way you should vet your infant sleep that will help prevent this? Or
SIDS is actually a diagnosis of exclusion. You can't really prevent true SIDS, but there's a new emerging definition called a sudden unexplained infant death or SUID. And that involves things like bed sharing, unsafe sleeping circumstances, like where the bedding is not safe, there's too much fluffy stuff, and the child suffocates, or things like that. It can be pretty depressing, but it's, like I said, the whole purpose of the program is we're trying to prevent other children from dying the same way.
Sure. Okay, yeah, that's scary. Wow. All right, let's move on to something a little lighter. What is your drink of choice?
Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew.
I'm a teetotaler, but Mountain Dew is my vice, and love the throwback stuff, and I bootleg in the Live Wire from the surrounding states because they don't sell it here in Alabama.
I love Live Wire. Okay, who is your favorite poster on ARFCOM? Whose post do you look forward to reading?
Well, I think like probably most of the site, I'd have to say Old Painless. You may have to end up modifying this question and ask, other than Old Painless, who's your favorite poster?
Old Painless is, hey,
let's just pretend that's the way you asked it. If you said OP aside, I'd have to say Piccolo.
Oh, Piccolo. Oh, yeah,
and not for the reasons you might think. It's not for his craziness, but he's one of my fellow Miata owners, and he and I both catch all sorts of grief on the spot driving
Miata.
Oh, don't
tell me that. Oh, man. Okay. All right.
I've had it for, next month it'll be 19 years I've had that little car. It's been a great little car.
It's lasted for a long time. I don't know you'd catch
it. Yeah, I bought it brand new in 91, and it's just, I've had a ball in that thing.
Okay. Who is your least favorite poster on ARFCOM? Whose post do you think you could do without reading?
Those would be the guys that have to come in those Miata posts and call me and Piccolo gay because we drive Miatas.
The anti-Miata crowd. Okay, I love it. Who is your favorite mod or site staff?
All right, I'd be in real trouble if I said anybody here except the Beer Slayer. And that's
the
because
Beer Slayer,
I know him,
okay.
You know, I know him away from the site. I know him personally. He's a great guy.
We'll talk about that in just a minute. I'll ask you a question about that.
Oh, okay. All right, go ahead.
Okay. If you could live anywhere other than where you live now, where would that be?
Burleson, Texas.
Another vote for Texas. Everybody's said Texas. I need to get down to Texas more. I've only been there once for a couple of days, like I said. I need to get down there and check it out. There's something going on down there that obviously I need to be clued in on.
Well, I love Texas in general, but Burleson, Texas was named after my great-great-great-great-grandfather, Rufus Burleson. So.
Oh, is that right? What's the story behind that?
Well, he's just, he was a very famous person in Texas history. He's the preacher who baptized, General Sam Houston. He's the, one of the main founders of Baylor University in Waco, so.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a good story. I like that. What is your favorite firearm that you currently own?
All right. Practically speaking, it'd have to be my Glock 19 or one of my Glock 19s because I carry one of those every day. But the last gun I would ever part with out of my collection would have to be my dad's M9. I've posted about this on the site several times, but my dad is a retired two-star general, and I have his Beretta M9 that was his DOD-issued sidearm while he was a general. So,
oh, wow. That's
I would
really
never
cool.
part with that for any price.
Do you ever shoot it?
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Guns are meant to be shot.
What branch was he in?
He was Army Reserve. I think it was 121st ARCOM, but the Southeastern Regional Command, he was the commander of all the Army Reservists in the Southeastern United States.
Wow, you've got quite a good lineage there. You've got a legend in Texas. You've got a bars and stars with a general. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm just trying to live up to him somehow.
aren't we all trying to live up to our people in our family tree? I've got my father and grandfather, too, I try to live up to. If you could have any one firearm that's legal for you to own that you do not currently own, what would that be?
I guess probably an MP5 SD. I always wanted to have one of those. I've fired one, but I've always wanted to own one.
With the happy switch, right?
Oh, yeah.
When was the last time you went shooting?
Last weekend.
Talk the talk.
Yeah, I've got my own range here on the property, just spitting distance from the front door, so I go pretty frequently, and I'll be going tomorrow, probably snow or not, still on the ground.
That makes it convenient. That really does. Have you ever met a fellow ARF farmer in real life? We talked a little bit about this before.
Yes, several. Several here in the southeastern region. In fact, I get together with some of the folks up in the greater Birmingham area. We used to get together two or three times a year to shoot. Now it just seems like we get together two or three times a year to eat.
What is your favorite non-GD section of the forms?
Well, I've got to say the pistol caliber carbine for them that's in the armory. And I've got to say that because I'm the one that pestered and begged site staff for years to get that thing established. So now that it's there, I'd be in trouble if I didn't say that was my favorite.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Got to cover your back. What was the first firearm you ever shot?
It was an old Winchester action that had been handed down through the family, and there was a little .22, you know, single shot. You had to pull back the plunger, you know, load each round in individually.
Yes,
and,
I know. All
it had been through. It had survived a fire years ago, and my great grandfather, who was a woodworker by trade, carpenter, and he built all sorts of really. I've got a beautiful old cedar chest that he built that's still airtight all these years later. But he had handmade this really neat stock with a Schnabel fore end and brass trim and everything on it. So that was just kind of handed down to me. That big old long .22 was my first gun and the first thing I shot.
Did you ever get rid of a firearm and regret it?
Oh, yeah. I've gotten rid of a bunch, and I don't have a lot of regrets because everything I got rid of was something that just didn't fill a need or something that I didn't shoot well. But just before the 94 federal assault weapon ban, just I'd say in the 2 years preceding that ban, I really was skeptical that ban would ever pass.
Uh-huh.
And in that 2 year period, I either traded away or sold. Let's see, I had a pristine HK94A3, I had a SPAS 12, I had pre-ban AKs, a couple of factory mini side folders, all sorts of guns that would have, you know, tripled or more in value if I just held on to them a little longer. So fiscally, I regret those.
Yeah, that's a lesson learned right there. That hurts. Tell me a little bit about your avatar. I like your avatar, and I'm going to start asking people about their avatars here on Get to Know.
Yeah, I've got the little praying child. I won't call him Calvin for, you know, copyright reasons, but he's a little praying guy in front of a cross. That has a little bit to do with the fact that, you know, I moderate the religion for him, and I'm a very outspoken person about my faith. I don't try to proselytize to other people, but if anybody asks, I'll bore you to death with it. But it's also kind of a wink and a nod to the folks who accuse us. I'm an old school primitive Baptist, and a lot of people confuse us with Calvinists. And so, you know, Calvinist.
Okay.
So it's kind of a wink to that. Plus, Calvin and Hobbes was my very favorite comic strip ever. So
I used to love Calvin and Hobbes.
I picked that a long time ago, and just kind of stuck.
Okay. Here we go. Last question. If you were elected president of the United States, what is the first thing you would do in office?
The first thing I would do, very first thing, I would strike down any type of firearm restriction, importation, ownership, whatever that you're able to strike down just using the power of the executive order. And then, of course, I'd try to co-opt, you know, as much support in Congress to repeal the rest of the mess.
Outstanding. I love it. A true Second Amendment rights guy. Okay. Thanks for being with us today. That was Hardshell on Get to Know. And we'll have another Get to Know for you next week. Thanks for joining us, Hardshell.
Oh, thank you very much.
That was Hardshell on Get to Know. Anybody who would like to be a participant on a Get to Know segment, feel free to send me an IM at radio_free_ARFCOM. Send me the IM. We'll get you on a pre-recorded interview. We do the pre-records usually Friday afternoon or Saturday afternoon. Coming up now, we're going to have a very interesting segment. We've got two guys. I don't know if you guys know about this. Two guys that were open carrying in a restaurant in Georgia. And the restaurant was being cased by some potential armed robbers. And these guys, the fact that they were there open carrying, prevented the robbery from taking place. We have Matt Brannon and J.P. Mitchell. Are you guys on with me? They're not on yet. We're still getting them on. Seth says, okay, we're still getting those guys on. This is a really great story, so I want you guys to stick around and listen to this. The open carry, concealed carry debate rages on, as it has for a few years now. This is just one example. It's not meant to be definitive or anything, but it is one example of where open carry actually prevented a crime. It didn't make somebody a target. It didn't make the criminals pick these guys out. It actually made the criminals decide they were going to hold off on their robbery. And it's a really interesting story, especially when you find out how these guys found out about it later, exactly what happened. They were actually on Armed American Radio last night. If anybody listens to Armed American Radio, you know what I'm talking about. Matt, JP, are you on with us?
I'm here.
I am too.
Hey, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it, guys. Your story is really interesting to me. You were in a Waffle House in Kennesaw, Georgia. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Matt, why don't you go ahead and just break down the scenario for those of us that don't know. I know everything that happened, but I'm sure there's some listeners out there that haven't heard about this. So why don't you go ahead and kind of just go through what happened, the events of that evening. It was in October, correct?
That's correct. It was on October 3rd. JP and I had been out a little bit late that night, and we stopped in at Waffle House to get a little bit of food and hang out and just kind of talk for a little bit. It's one of those where it's really nice to be able to sit down and have some coffee and some good conversation. So the store had gotten a little bit busy earlier in the night, and then it had started settling down. And while we were in there, there was a guy who had come in and kind of walked through the store like he was looking for someone or something. And we had noticed him, just kind of paid attention, because he didn't come in like he was a customer coming in to sit down somewhere to eat. He just kind of walked through and was looking at all the booths and looking under and all that, and then left. Now, what JP and I did not know at that time was that the waitress there had already seen a car pulling through the parking lot that kind of had freaked her out because they'd pulled through a couple of times. And she had called the police department over a suspicious vehicle. And we were in there and, unaware that this guy had come in to case the store to be able to bring in a crew for armed robbery.
Now, let me stop you for a second, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Now, we're a little bit less politically correct here on Radio Free ARFCOM. We don't have all these rules that everyone else has to follow. Can you describe this guy that came in to case the joint, please?
I can't say exactly what he was wearing because it's been a little while now, but he was a younger black male, and he was wearing baggy clothes, pants sagging down really far, that kind of clothing. That it's one of those things where it is an indicator of somebody to watch generally. I don't like to make generalizations about groups of people, but you also start to learn who to pay attention to based on your own life experiences. And it was somebody to pay attention to.
Oh, absolutely. So, and being concealed carry, being permit holders, you can't go around in condition white. You've got to be aware of your surroundings.
That's correct. Minimum of condition yellow at all times. And then
okay, so
as,
go ahead.
As the situation dictates, go from there.
Okay, so you were unaware the waitress actually had called the police on this suspicious car in the parking lot, and this guy was the front man coming in to case the joint and make sure everything was okay for this crew to come in and rob it, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so he comes in, and you guys were sitting in the booth. Now, JP, how were you guys sitting here? So that he saw both of your weapons, or he only saw one of you guys actually with the weapon, or how did that work?
As far as I can remember, Matt was sitting facing the door, which would have put his gun to the outside of the booth. I more likely ended up, getting up to go to the restroom because I go through a lot of coffee when I'm at Waffle House.
Okay.
And, we're both right-handed, so in order for him to have seen my weapon, I would have had to get out of the booth.
So he actually did not see your weapon. There's only one weapon that he saw, and that one weapon was enough to make them back off their attempt temporarily, correct?
Well, as far as I understand, the officer said that they saw two of us.
Oh, okay. So he might have saw you get up and go to the restroom and saw your weapon at that point, right? What were you guys carrying?
1911.
1911s, okay, cocked and ready to go, right? Condition one.
Yep.
Okay. Just for this is a gun website. The radio show is for AR15.com. What ammunition do you guys carry, JP? What do you carry, and Matt? What do you carry?
I carry Winchester hollow points.
And I also carry Winchester hollow points.
Okay. So the guy comes in. He leaves. You guys go back to your conversation and your coffee. And then you guys get up to leave the restaurant, and what happens at that point?
Who do you want to field this one?
It doesn't matter. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, well, we got up and left, and the waitress had been busy with someone else, and she didn't have time to let us know that she had called the police on someone. When that has happened before, she's asked us to stay a little bit longer just to make sure. She was busy.
So she knows you guys carry on a regular basis.
Yes, she does. The management and the waitresses, the wait staff know that we carry. The management actually, it really likes the fact that we and several other people come into that store to carry, or come into that store while carrying, because, you know, it makes them feel safer. They're not happy that they are prohibited from being able to protect themselves by corporate policy, but there's no policy that makes it so that the patrons cannot.
So Waffle House's corporate policy is there's some Waffle Houses that post no weapons, but this particular one, they don't post, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And in Georgia, just so everybody knows, if you have a permit to carry, you can carry concealed or open. It doesn't matter. Do I understand that correctly?
That's also correct.
Okay. So
our permit actually, the way the law is written for the permit, it says that you may conceal, rather than it being you can, carry open under certain circumstances or whatever. It says that you can carry your weapon and it may be concealed by clothing.
Okay. Okay. She calls the cops. She didn't have time to actually tell you like she usually does to stick around. So you guys get up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then what? You see apparently you saw a police cruiser pulling the parking lot as you guys were pulling out?
That's correct. And they do cruise through there fairly regularly to check in to make sure everybody's okay. That store is on a busy road next to a highway. So it's one of those where the police do come through there to try and check on things regularly anyway. And so I saw them coming in as we were heading out, and I didn't think anything of it.
Okay. And now, so everybody knows, you guys left, and you had no idea that you had actually delayed and ultimately prevented a robbery. And how did you actually come about to where you were actually found out that, oh, wow, we actually prevented that robbery?
Well, we had found out the next day from the waitress that these guys had been in there in the parking lot and had gotten caught, but we didn't put two and two together with that scout. I had called the precinct's captain earlier this month trying to discuss a training issue with one officer, and while speaking with the captain, he was bringing up the good and bad about open carry. And he brought up a situation where there was a bad encounter for open carry. But then he also said, now on the good side of open carry, we had an incident at a Waffle House where two guys were eating that were armed, and there was a crew that decided to wait to go in to rob the place because they were in there. And he started telling the story about this particular night. And I started laughing because I realized what he was talking about once he had given enough details. And I said, that was me and one of my friends. So from there, we got the confirmation from the law enforcement that these guys had actually said, yeah, we saw some guys carrying in there, and we didn't want to go in yet.
So they delayed, and that delay actually allowed time for law enforcement to show up and make the arrest. There was apparently more than one car involved?
Yes, there was two cars.
And they're full of guys with guns and ski masks, is that correct?
From what I hear, it's four people. There was pistols, rifles, and ski masks.
Now, this was a potentially disastrous situation if you think about it. You've got two law-abiding, lawful-carrying citizens in the restaurant. You've got two carloads of criminals, potential felons, outside in the car ready to do the deed. And then you also have the police on the way as a response from the waitress. You could have had any number of scenarios there. You could have had a hostage situation eventually when the police show up and you've got armed guys in the store with you guys. You guys could have been involved in a deadly force encounter, most assuredly would have been involved in a deadly force encounter had they not seen your open carry weapons. Have you guys gone over that after the fact and sat down and talked about it and been like, holy cow, this could have been really bad?
Yeah, we kind of you know, have sat down at that same Waffle House and discussed it several times you know, dude, what if they didn't send in the scout?
What if they just kicked in the door and came in, huh?
Well, honestly, the way that Waffle House is set up, it has a double door set up,
uh-huh.
and the whole front of the Waffle House is glass.
Okay.
So if they had come around with rifles and everything, we would have seen them before they even got to the first tour.
Okay.
And so at that
it would have been up to you at that point to make a decision what you were going to do.
Yeah.
And a very quick decision at that. You know, a friend of ours recently was held up at gunpoint while carrying, and he had no time to make the decision of pull or not pull. And in his situation, he didn't pull his weapon because there was someone that already had a weapon pointed at his head, and it was the best decision for him not to. In our situation, I've played it back over and over, and there's so many different variations of things that could have happened. One little thing that would have made the decision of whether I could even have reasonably tried to reach for my weapon or not.
Yeah, that's...
And I don't know, and I'm glad that I don't know. I truly
avoidance
do treat
is the best
my...
Okay. Go ahead.
I truly do treat my firearm like a fire extinguisher in your house. You know, I hope I never have to use the fire extinguisher that's in my kitchen, but it's there, and I'm prepared to use it, and I know how to use it. It's the same kind of thing.
Right, which is the mentality that we all should have while we're carrying. Now, you guys are both members of Georgia Carry, correct?
That's correct.
How long have you been with that organization?
I joined up with them about a year ago.
And you, JP?
Just about a month after he did.
Oh, okay. So... you guys both kind of joined up about the same time. I take it you guys are really good friends. You spend a lot of time together.
Yeah.
In your personal life, right? How often do you guys go to the range?
Not as often as I want to.
I
try and shoot at least once a month. That's about all I can afford to right now.
Have you taken any training classes at all?
I have some plans for some training classes. Luckily, I do have a roommate who is a former Marine. They're Marines for life. He's no longer active Marine, who has been trying to help with some of the training. Right now, with the economy as tough as it is, just money is too tight to be able to do much.
Yeah, we spoke last week on the show about training and how important it is, and it's something definitely everyone should invest in. Now, when you carry... Matt, do you carry most of the time concealed, or do you carry, is it 50-50 concealed and open carry, or how often are you open carry?
I'm actually mostly open carry. I do have a good concealed carry rig, and when I am out for work, I do conceal because I don't need to know someone's politics when it's a business thing, and they don't really need to know mine. When I'm on my personal time, I'm generally open carry.
Okay, what about you, JP?
I usually have mine in a shoulder rig.
Oh, okay. And was that changed since this event, or is that generally how you were carrying before?
That actually changed when I got the shoulder rig about 3 months ago.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't the event that changed it. It was just you got the shoulder rig, and that's what worked best for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, JP, have you ever had any experiences with law enforcement when you were carrying, ever been stopped or harassed or just any interaction at all with or with regular citizens that are like, whoa, this guy's got a gun?
A lot of them happened at that same Waffle House. As a matter of fact, earlier this week, I ended up calling the police on someone trying to sell drugs at that Waffle House. And,
oh, wow.
When he was harassing the customers for a ride and everything else, and he ended up asking me, hey, man, you want to buy some smoke? And I'm like, no, get that stuff away from me.
He picked the wrong guy to ask, huh?
Well, the same waitress ended up sitting there going, hey, call the non-emergency number for Cobb County and have them send a cruiser by. And while I'm on the phone with him, I mentioned, hey, yeah, and the guy has drugs on him, too. And they're like, okay, we'll be right there. And the funniest part is, you know, they ended up searching him, found the drugs, put them in the back of the car, and then they're like, okay, who called the cops? I'm like, oh, I did. I walked over, he started asking me for my information. I'm like, oh, hold on. And I pulled my wallet out and pulled my carry permit out, which has the same information as the driver's license, and handed it to the officer. And he's like, he kind of looked at me like, huh? I'm like, yeah, it's under my left arm. And he goes, okay. I started writing down the information.
And you didn't have a problem at all, huh?
No. The funniest, still funnier part is the kid sitting there going, is this the guy that called the cops on me? And the officer's like, yeah, you see this? Showing him my GFL. And he goes, what's that? He goes, this means he has a gun on him. And if you come after him, he has all right to shoot you.
I bet that guy doesn't go to another Waffle House to sell any more dope, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a good story. What about you, Matt? Do you ever have any experiences outside of this one with law enforcement or with regular civilians?
Oh, I've had a few very minor things. I've had some conversations with civilians who have asked about it, and we've had conversations, and I think most of them have been where they walk away knowing that, you know, I'm not, you know, somebody who's about to commit a crime or whatever, because I'm just a normal person. The reason that I had called the captain about a training issue with an officer actually did involve the fact that I was openly carrying my firearm, and that officer had made a comment to someone else while I was in the restroom, tell your buddy to cover his weapon, his permit is for concealed carry only, and then the officer left. So I called the captain to be able to talk with him about a training issue with his officer, so that his officer does know that someone who is open carrying, you know, can open carry as long as they have that license, so that that officer doesn't possibly end up creating a problem with another citizen who is lawfully carrying. And I didn't have an issue with that officer, say that, you know, he decided to, you know, throw me in cuffs or anything like that. No, he just made a comment, but I wanted to make sure that it didn't go further with someone else further down the road. Other than that, I've had several interactions with law enforcement while carrying, and they have never had an issue. I had an officer who was taking information at an accident scene, and it was pouring rain, and he asked if he could climb in my truck to get out of the rain while he took my information. And I told him, you know, there is a .45 on my hip, and I'm going to have to reach past it for my license. And he says, okay, fine. it's been a non-issue.
So it really hasn't been an issue. The biggest real issue was one officer told you that you had to conceal it, and he just wasn't quite aware of the law. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Wow. So what has changed for you guys since this event? Has anything changed in your life as far as how you conduct yourself, how you carry your weapon? Are you even more aware than you were before?
Well, for me, I generally try and stay relatively alert, but following this, it's been one of those where I try and keep a little bit more of an eye out, because it did bring things a little bit closer to home. I know several people who have had incidents like what I had said earlier of a friend of mine being robbed at gunpoint just a couple of weeks ago. I am noticing more and more of local crime issues and violent crime issues. So this brought it, you know, right to my front door of, you know, keep your eyes open.
So tell me a little bit about this incident with your friend. Do you know the background behind the story there?
He's a freelance photographer, and he was down in an area of Atlanta called Cabbage Town. And he was taking some photographs.
Is that a bad part of town, just for people that don't know Atlanta?
It has been a relatively bad part of town, and they've been making some improvements down there, building some condos, and it has gotten better, but it is still considered a kind of rough area.
An older part of town.
Is an older part of town. And he was doing some photography of some of the graffiti art that's down there. And he's also, he does crime scene photography, so he had his radios on him so that if there was a crime scene, he was close by so that he would be able to get there to be able to get the job doing the crime scene photography. He was heading back towards his vehicle and had noticed a person heading the opposite direction, and, you know, took note of what the guy was wearing, how the guy carried himself, and then continued on his way. And as he approached his vehicle, he realized that this guy had jumped the guardrail that had separated them and was sprinting at him. He hopped into his vehicle to try and just fire it up and go, and before he had a chance to, this guy was on him and broke the window with the butt of a gun and had the gun right at the side of his head. He gave up his camera equipment rather than giving up his life. Having a gun already to his head, he could not clear his holster to get his weapon into action.
You're not going to win that situation, definitely. Did he see the guy's weapon as the guy was running up to him, or did he not see a weapon at that point?
He didn't see the weapon until the guy was right there. Talking to him, doing his hindsight, his Monday morning quarterback on it, he's saying, if I had known that the guy had a gun when he started running, I would have taken that, a lot different than just trying to get into my vehicle. He thought that the guy was just going to try and, strong arm him.
Wow. That's two great stories, your story and the story of your friend, about why we need to be vigilant. I encourage everybody who doesn't have a carry permit, if you are eligible to get one in your state, please go out and get one. Join your local carry organizations. For instance, if you live in Georgia, Georgia Carry. These organizations are great ways to reach out to other gun members, to get good training, good insights, good advice. I want to thank Matt Brannon and J.P. Mitchell. Thank you guys for being on, and thank you guys for being law-abiding gun owners. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Thanks, J.P. Appreciate it. All right, guys, that's everything for today on Radio Free ARFCOM. I have a special guest I'm trying to line up for next week. I'm going to keep it a secret until at least Friday. Hopefully I can book this guy. It'll be a really, really good show. I want to thank Merrill once again for keeping all the links up on the discussion threads. Anybody who wants to be on a get-to-know segment or Stump the Deej, which you can win a free membership for a free team membership for AR15.com, feel free to IM me, radio_free_ARFCOM. Send me an IM, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. I want to thank Seth, our super producer, for keeping the show running smooth, even though sometimes I don't help him out as much as I should. God bless America, you guys, and I'll see you next week on Radio Free ARFCOM.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.